It's a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll recap Miami's loss to the Portland Trailblazers and look at its impact on the Eastern Conference playoff picture.
And we'll also talk about Justice Winslow's impressive night and take some of your Twitter questions. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. I write for Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romello, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomello13.
On a night when they were without Hassan Whiteside, they were without Dwayne Wade, Miami loses in Portland 115-99. The Trailblazers led by as many as 19 points at the start of the fourth quarter, but the Heat got it down to three with about 6 minutes left. But that's when Damian Lillard did what Damian Lillard does, hitting a pair of threes to extend the lead. Jusuf Nurkić, who gave Miami problems all night, he had 4 points and an assist in the final stretch as well. There's only so much you can do to limit Lillard, David, who finished with 32 points. He made 7 of his 14 three-point attempts, some from very long range, as Lillard is wont to do. But you can't give up 27 points to Nurkić and expect to win a game like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, in the preview, I said that if Miami played their typical style of allowing a large deficit and trying to claw their way back, it wasn't going to work, specifically because of what we saw, where Lillard bails them out in the fourth quarter and crushes opposing teams. They've won 10 in a row for a reason. Lillard is the biggest part of that. So Miami played their style, and they were already shorthanded without Whiteside and Wade, so they didn't have much offensive options on the bench there. Their starting unit kind of really did not look particularly good against the Trailblazers, and Nurkić in particular. Look, as critical as we've been of Hassan Whiteside, his impact was certainly noticeable tonight. Without him there, Nurkić was feasting at the rim, just absolutely dominated his matchup against Adebayo. Adebayo's quickness makes him better to play, smaller centers and forwards, where he can kind of match up and use his strength there. And as strong as he was no match for the Bosnian Bear. 27 points, that's unbelievable night for him. Probably, I don't know if it's a career night.
It was his best game in more than a month.
Oh, there you go.
And so, Whiteside. No, go ahead.
Oh yeah, as far as Whiteside is concerned, look, I mean, I think that their backcourt got a lot of their Portland's backcourt got a lot of their points on pick and roll situations, where Whiteside probably would have been toasted as well. But for me, it was those secondary actions where you didn't have that rim protector, where you could swing the ball, even if you had another perimeter defender close out on those pick and roll situations. They could move the ball and find somebody easier at the rim, and that's what happened. Look, that's how I think Nurkić got a lot of his points, was because they kept swinging, pass the ball, and finally they would get an easier opportunity at the basket. And that's where a guy like Whiteside helps out, obviously, because, even if you start funneling shooters off the perimeter, he's there to close those things out and impact their shots. We saw with C.J. McCollum taking guys like Rodney Magruder and Josh Richardson off the dribble and getting to the rim rather easily. He's got some nice moves and he can finish at a high level around there, but I think it probably would have been a lot more difficult for him to do so if Hassan Whiteside is there impacting shots.
You hit on a few points there that I kind of want to touch on and elaborate, because Nurkić, number one, right? Miami had started Bam Adebayo in Whiteside's place. Adebayo, a rookie, an impressive rookie, but a rookie nonetheless. Yeah. And they went to Nurkić right away. Nurkić scoring six of the first 6 points for Portland, and so that was obviously something that they identified as a weak spot in Miami's defense. And then again, to your point, where they're Miami is done this between Miami and Portland. These are two of the top five teams in the league in limiting 3-point shooting attempts, right? And so, and Miami wasn't able to do that tonight. They gave up 36 three-point attempts to Portland. Portland made 14 of those 36, which is not a bad clip for them. And I think having Whiteside back there as a safety valve or as a safety blanket behind these guards who so often are able to run guys off the line would have helped them, obviously. And again, to your point, there is, we could talk about, the advanced metrics and you and I think we use a lot of that on the show, but sometimes it's something as simple as Portland wasn't scared to go to the rim. And when Whiteside is there, for better or worse, he in some way will prevent opponents from getting to the rim as easily, and or from even or from wanting to go to the rim. You see a lot of players when faced with Hassan Whiteside in the paint, pulling up for ill-advised floaters or mid-range pull-up jump shots and things like that. That wasn't the case. They were freely passing the ball in the paint. There was not the long limbs of Whiteside to sort of get in the way of that. And that was an issue. Now, Miami did make some adjustments down the stretch. Mm-hmm. They adjusted their defense specifically against Damian Lillard, who was so successful in the pick and roll. They came up and actually switched on Lillard and then would double him at the point of the screen in order to sort of limit him. And they started doing this midway through the fourth quarter after Lillard had checked in. Miami at that point had actually gotten the game to 6 points. And Lillard really didn't know what to do the first couple of possessions that he faced that defense. Yeah. And he threw the ball away on one occasion. But then after those two occasions, he figured it out immediately. And the way he figured it out was just by shooting jumpers, because that's what Damian Lillard does. He can just pull up from 28 feet and still drain a three-pointer in your face. And that's exactly what he did. There's just, look, this game, what it comes down to, we can argue about Whiteside. Dwayne Wade, I think, would have helped against Portland too, just because they willingly give up the mid-range shots so that they can limit threes and shots to the rim. Wade can sort of be a little effective in that in-between area. I think he would have helped on the offensive end. But even if they had Whiteside or Wade, I think Portland is just a better team. Portland playing at home, I still think the Trailblazers would have won that game. So you don't want to blame everything on just being shorthanded.
Yeah, I agree there. Now, look, Portland also did win the free throw battle. They took 30 free throws in comparison to just 16. I saw some questionable calls, particularly mm-hmm. Damian Lillard coming around screens where he was supposedly or allegedly fouled on you know, shooting a three-pointer there. I think he had 2 4-point plays, I think, throughout the night, and a number of times. He did shoot 9 of 10 at the line, so he had plenty of free-throw opportunities. Miami wasn't getting those same benefit of the call there, so – as much as you don't want to blame the officiating.
On one occasion, Goran Dragic tried to draw that foul, yeah, and they called it an offensive foul, on Damian Lillard, yeah, or because Damian Lillard got hit by Dragic's elbow or something.
Yeah, that's something. It was difficult to watch at occasion there. I mean, Miami, to their credit, were able to come back. But I think, you know, in our last show, we took a mailbag question as far as, you know, Miami's ability to knock off anybody in the Eastern Conference, considering how well they've played of late. And then you go up against one of the hottest teams in the league that's won, you know, 9 in a row before tonight's win. And you clearly see where Miami stands in the pecking order, and it's not particularly good.
With this loss and Milwaukee defeating Memphis on Monday night, the Heat dropped to 8th place in the East. They're half game now behind the Bucks for 7, and they're full game behind the 76ers for 6th place in the East. We'll get to your Twitter questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat next. But a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long that delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break.
And make sure to listen on Tuesdays, when Wes and I will be hosting for the rest of the season. We just recorded one, so when you're done listening to this, hop on over to Locked On NBA. To get the latest episode every day, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
We're getting to our spotlight players later on. But let's go to Twitter and take some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This one comes from Taylor, who writes in, Goran Dragic finally in, under 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Don't understand that. This is in reference to Dragic of sitting basically most of the fourth quarter, despite Miami being down for all of the fourth quarter. Dragic played the entire third quarter, though, and he did check in with 3 minutes and 15 seconds as the Heat were down 104-95 and helped them sort of get back into that game a little bit. Yeah. And Dragic did end up with 31 minutes in the game. I just think what we saw tonight was just maybe a little with Wade out, Spoelstra having to adjust his rotations in the backcourt.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, one domino impacts the rest, so I think that's what we saw. You know, Spoelstra probably could have changed things up. You know, with Wade out there, he probably would have gone to Dragic a little earlier, maybe played Wade earlier in the third quarter, et cetera. So, you know, you can't really change what happened. Hopefully Wade comes back against the Lakers that they face next? I'm drawing a blank.
Sacramento.
Oh, good. So hopefully he'll be back against that the Kings there. You know, the Kings played the Thunder pretty tough tonight, so that should be an interesting matchup for Miami.
Yeah, Dragic, 10 of 17 from the floor, 23 points. Would have helped down the stretch a little bit more, but ultimately he did play his allotted 31 minutes. Our next one comes from Eddie, who writes in, how good would Justice Winslow be if he had Dion's irrational confidence? And I just want to I wanted to include this, David, because I think he's starting to have Dion's irrational confidence. There, he is playing with a sort of swagger we have never seen from Justice Winslow before. There was one play where he drove into the lane and flipped up an acrobatic layup and made it.
Yes.
I mean, this is a guy who is taking and now making those shots.
Oh, yeah. There was a three-pointer at the top of the key where I think Kelly Olynyk screened for him and then passed the ball back to Winslow on the perimeter. And he was just realized that the defender had been cut off there. It wasn't going out to contest the shot. He's like, okay, leave me open. And he drained it. He nailed it smooth as silk. So I don't know if irrational confidence is ever going to be in the works. I mean, Dion and guys like Mario Chalmers are a very, very rare breed. I don't know that we necessarily can expect that from Justice Winslow. But more confidence is certainly, I think, something we can look forward to. And he's starting to develop it. And again, as you said, maybe even with a little bit of a swagger there too. So I think that's a really good step for him. Look, I mean, it's much better than the version of him we've seen over the last 2 years where there was a noticeable hitch in his shot. He was scared to take it there. Even when he was wide open on a short corner, he wasn't necessarily taking those shots. And so now it's impressive to see him be willing to take it up against larger players. And he has the speed and the athleticism to take some really quality shots there. So I think we're starting to see his immense growth over the last few games of the season.
And just a note on irrational confidence, you talk about a guy like Deion Waiters, who, of course, is the poster child of irrational confidence.
Oh, yeah.
And Deion, he could do a couple of things, but mainly he's a scorer, and that's the role he plays, and that's kind of his only elite skill set. Justice Winslow, on the other hand, he could do a lot of different things. Of course, there's the ball handling. There's the elite defense that he has on the perimeter, his switchability, his versatility, and all these things. I think Winslow is a high IQ basketball player.
That's right.
He's got an elite, I think, instinct for the game, a good feel for the game, and that's been on display more later than it has been. I think he's in a position where he could pick and choose his spots a little bit more than just having that irrational Dion, you know what, I feel like pulling up, so I'm gonna do it right now kind of game. You know, I think Winslow's a little bit more thoughtful. Yeah. I guess, in his approach to the game.
I'm looking forward to this summer when him and Dwayne Wade match up with Jimmy Butler and train during the offseason together, maybe even get LeBron James in there for a few workouts. That should be a lot of fun, hopefully getting him to that elite level. I don't know if it's realistic to expect him to reach that, but hopefully he can continue to take those steps. I don't know. Potential MVP candidate?
He could get he could take the Victor Oladipo treatment. I mean, Oladipo worked out with Dwayne Wade this last summer. Look what he's doing for Indiana. Maybe it's the same treatment. Our next one comes from Kevin, who writes in, should Justice Winslow start next season after the Heat trade Hassan Whiteside for a good power forward? I included this because I've been thinking about this lately, and Winslow, the way he's been playing, and just given by his draft position, honestly, he is – one of the pieces of the future for Miami, right? I think we can all agree on that to some degree. And right now, on a healthy roster, he is a little buried, and I'm not sure what he's going to be able to do. I like how he's playing coming off the bench right now, but his future should obviously be starting, and I wonder how that works. You and I have mentioned that he's struggled a little bit as a starter, specifically at the power forward spot, because he does just give up a little bit of size against other starting power forwards. And he can't exactly switch against centers. He doesn't offer the rim protection that somebody like James Johnson, who has a little bit more size, does in that starting spot. But I think, look, if we're going to trade Whiteside, I think you leave Winslow at power forward and you go and get a longer small forward and you move Josh Richardson to the two. Now, I know I'm getting very specific here, David, but it's something I've been thinking about. If you look at the future construction of this roster, it's not a team that's necessarily long, and we saw that tonight versus Portland. Portland's length really bothered Miami, especially when Portland was on defense. Miami needs to go into the summer getting longer, regardless of what happens for the rest of the season and the postseason. They need to go into the summer getting longer. And one of the ways you could do that is by sliding Josh Richardson from the three to the two, and then going out and getting a longer small forward. And you look at what teams with smaller power forwards do. You look at Houston, with PJ Tucker. They've got Trevor Ariza, a long small forward who could sort of switch along with PJ Tucker. You look at what the Warriors have with Durant, who's basically 7 feet tall playing small forward. They've got Draymond Green at power forward. Those guys could switch a little bit on the perimeter. I think the Heat need to find that kind of player next to Winslow to start at small forward, somebody that's 6'9 to 6'11, I mean, at best. You know, you can get so in that range.
To Kevin's point, though, couldn't you just slide Winslow into the small forward spot and then acquire a longer power forward, a lankier power forward that might be able to switch him between both forward positions?
Yeah, I think that's what you're looking for, is that Winslow is kind of that combo forward. You need to find another combo forward. I guess that's my point, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. I don't think that the Heat need to go out and get a traditional power forward. You know, they need to get somebody who could play both.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. I don't know anybody who's available. Do you?
No, and certainly not for Whiteside. One trade that, I mean, I wouldn't mind trading Hassan Whiteside for, I don't know, Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu from Portland, two guys we saw tonight. I mean, we didn't see Harkless, did we? Did Harkless
play? Yeah, he got a key block against, I want to say, Tyler Johnson, I think.
Yeah, he only played 17 minutes and missed both of his field goals. That's why I forgot about him. All right, let's go to our spotlight next. But first, did you know that you can listen to Locked On Heat now on your home assistant, like the Amazon Echo or Google Home? It's a hands-free way to listen to the latest episodes of Locked On Heat or any of the other Locked On Podcast Network shows. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, spotlight player time, David. Who you got?
Yeah, it was hard to sift through all the hot garbage and find anything of value. So we're going to focus on the negative, as we often do here on Locked On Heat. Wayne Ellington was my spotlight player, a rousing 11 points on 4 of 12 shooting, including 3 of 10. Also had one turnover, 2 steals, though, and 3 rebounds. So not a bad night, I think. Not a horrific night, but not a very good one either. Ellington's still kind of rounding into shape as he tries to get back into the lineup there and find his stroke. Hopefully he'll find it over the next few games as the season closes out. Because on a night against on a night like Monday against Portland, he was missing in action. Put the ball down a couple of times unnecessarily, really forced the action there. Came around screens without much space and kind of hoisted these shots, falling off balance. Shots that we've seen him make in the past, but when Miami was down by such a large deficit, not the kind of ideal shot you'd want. Even from a guy like Ellington, who we know can make those. So I was particularly concerned seeing some of those. I just wondered why he was rushing shots. There was one time in particular, I think Miami forced a turnover. Ellington ran to the corner there. They outlet the ball to him. And with 20 seconds on the shot clock, he took a fadeaway jumper there from the corner that he missed, of course. And it just felt like a really rushed, unnecessary shot. So I'd say, well, Ellington had a pretty bad night.
Ellington not there to bail out the Heat when they needed him, as they so often need for him to do in the second half. There was a period there in the second half where Miami went for 5.5 minutes without scoring a single field goal. They had Bam Adebayo, I think, made a free throw in that time, but not without an actual shot from the field. And that's ultimately, I mean, to go back to your original point where Miami just couldn't get into a deep deficit and expect to win this game, you certainly can't go scoreless for almost 6 minutes against Portland, who very rarely go a minute without scoring. And expect to win that game, especially in the Moda Center. My spotlight player is Bam Adebayo. An unfortunate night for him, for the rookie who started tonight in place of Whiteside. Played 25 minutes, but he was 1 for 10 from the floor. Only scored 4 points. Really, and look, I talked about Nurkic earlier, who kind of got out of the gates hot with 6 points to start the game. Really, just directing his efforts directly at Bam Adebayo. I thought that Adebayo was starting to force it a little bit in that game. There was one series where, you know, he put the ball on the ground, dribbled to the rim, put up a decent shot, but not a great look, and it missed. He got the rebound, put it back up again, missed. He got like 2 or 3 rebounds and missed 2 or 3 times at the rim, and it was and you could see how frustrated he was afterwards.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really tough night for a rookie.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought up that play because I was going to do the same thing. I've seen Josh Richardson do it on a number of occasions, but so I guess this is just kind of like rookie growth. But he put his head in his hands and kind of just said, "What the hell am I doing? How did I miss 3 shots within 3 feet of the rim?" He normally has such deft touch there, but I think he was concerned with Nurkic's size and length and impacting his shots there. Finished 1 of 10. I mean, that's a really bad night. And the 9 rebounds. you know, as nice a statistic as that sounds like, I think it was because of what we just talked about, plays like that, where he was getting a lot of shots around the rim, a lot of touches and putbacks there, but those shots weren't falling. So, you know, as much as we complain the officiating or Dame Lillard going off in the fourth quarter, Miami had plenty of opportunities throughout the game to really capitalize, turn those around, and maybe steal a win in Portland. Just couldn't do it. They shot only 43% of the night. You know, and worse than that, 32% from 3-point range. So not a good night for Miami.
No, and Adebayo, I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, why he's sort of fallen out of the rotation here as Miami gets healthy and shortens their rotation. Yeah. Adebayo obviously starting in place for Whiteside, but once Whiteside comes back, you could see him just basically falling out completely. And I think it's because of this. I mean, it seemed like Bam was a little overwhelmed by the moment. You look for silver lining. He had 3 assists that night. He did have 4 offensive rebounds. If you look at the box score, though, 2 or 3 of those came on that series we were just talking about. So I wouldn't exactly look at that as a silver lining. Tough night for Bam. You hope that he can bounce back from that. That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with our conversation with Michael Wallace, who covered the Miami Heat for 10 years for the Miami Herald and ESPN. And specifically during that Big 3 area, that was a really fun conversation we recorded earlier today before the Portland game. We can't wait for you guys to hear that. That'll be out Wednesday morning. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy Mauve Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.